Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Well, welcome back to Addicted to Faith, the Last Storyteller podcast. I missed you guys. I was out for a week. The eye surgery went well. I can now see out of both eyes again, and you don't realize how much you're missing of the world until you get a doctor go in there and remove a cataract from your eye. So everything's bright. Everything went good. So a shout out to Josh LaVar, Dr. Josh LaVar here in New Braunfels, Texas. He did a great job. It's a mystery to me how they do those things, but it worked. Speaking of mysteries, tonight's guest author is a mystery writer named Sarah Blanchard. She comes to us from the East Coast, from Connecticut. She'd gone to school at the University of Connecticut and Nicholas College in Massachusetts, spent some time in Hawaii teaching and writing. And now she's back and writing mystery books. Welcome on board, Miss Sarah Blanchard. How are you this evening?
I am great. And thank you so much for having me on here. I really appreciate the opportunity. I love talking about reading and books, and happy to talk about my own books, but you know, everybody's books.
It's a wonderful thing. I overlooked is you also are a poet.
Yes.
You have a book of poetry out there also, true?
I do.
You are prolific in writing. You have a book that came out last year, Drawn from Life, and you've got one coming out that we're going to talk a little bit more about here in a few minutes called Grab Town, and that's being released on the 15th of October. Yes. I went to your bio, and I was reading your bio, and for our listeners, these are the words that show up. I love this one. When we're talking about Sarah Blanchard, the storyteller, the writer. She writes about conflicted people, flawed, compassionate characters who believe they must battle their own demons, complex antagonists who feel they have nothing to lose. And I kept looking on here. I'm trying to find out, does she have a degree in psychology? Because all your characters need to sit on a couch.
And they resist doing that also. They all tend to resist doing that because they think they can figure it all out themselves. I took a few psychology courses, including a criminology course at one point, way back, ages ago, undergraduate degree. I was one of those people who was always interested in doing a zillion different things. And, you know, it was sort of like squirrel. And then I'd go down that rabbit hole and figure out what that was all about and come back out and head for the next shiny thing and learn as much as I could about all that stuff. So it all comes through in my writing.
And your characters, definitely in your characters, you can see that.
Yes.
Drawn from Life came out in April of 2024. And it is unusual when we think of mystery stories and the characters. How did you come up with this story itself? And these two women, they're related cousins. They're cousins?
Yes. Yep.
And polar opposites of each other.
Yes.
But it's incredible how well they complement the story together.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Drawn from Life, and then we're going to move on to Grab Town, because that's the one I'm excited about.
Okay. So Drawn from Life took me about 4 or 5 years to write. In 2017, 2018, I read an article in the New Yorker magazine. And it's by a woman named Alice Armstrong. She wrote a nonfiction piece called The Sorrow and the Shame of the Accidental Killer. And I read that and I was absolutely struck by the concept of having people who, through no fault of their own, or perhaps as their job, in the case of soldiers, for example, end up causing harm, great harm, or death to people, often people they do not know, and having to live with that after. In the case of the Drawn from Life novel, I have a young woman who's 19 years old, and she's in a terrible car crash, and in which she almost dies, and a mother and two small children do die in the crash. It's in the mountains of North Carolina. I said it there because that's where I was living at the time. And in this novel, this young woman who's very ethical, she has a very high, sets a high moral standard for herself, has a very strong moral compass. And I wanted to ask the question of what happens when that sort of person violates her own moral compass. So I put her into a situation where she may or may not have caused this accident. She can't remember. She herself was almost killed in a coma. And she really has no memory of the accident, which is often true with something so traumatic. And then I had her needing to heal, recover physical injuries and so forth. This is all really kind of part of the backstory. And I put her in a situation where she's managing to get along with her issues, but then her very nice, protective, she has a lot of friends, she has a good job and her father to help take care of her. And then I put her in a situation where we introduce some trouble. And the trouble is in the form of her estranged cousin, whom she grew up with but hasn't seen for 8 years, coincidentally, right after that accident. And this cousin shows up again suddenly. And the cousin wants back into the family. The cousin wants money. She needs money. She's going through a divorce. And she's a very different person from Emma, our protagonist. And Lucy, the antagonist, wants stuff. She wants things. She wants money. She's greedy. She's a narcissist. We kind of know that right from the beginning because they've had a troubled relationship all along where Emma's the good kid and Lucy's always been kind of thrust into Emma's world. And they've been made to live together and do things together on their own. And Lucy's the very dominant personality and not very nice. So I've put Emma in a situation where she not only has to continue the recovery that she's kind of been stalled in, she also has to do battle with this troublesome cousin who turns out to be more troublesome than what she realized. But the problem is she can't just send Lucy away or out of the family, because Lucy might be the only person who can answer Emma's questions about what happened in that car crash. Was Emma really at fault? So to resolve the guilt she's carrying, there's a chance of an answer, but it means bargaining with Lucy. So I put them into a situation where they really kind of have to negotiate with one another and in order to get along and get what they each want. And then I throw a few other dangerous things into the mix, and a nice detective from Hawaii, and a really idyllic setting in the mountains of North Carolina where I was living at the time. So that's pretty much the genesis for that story.
And that's here. We don't want to give much more than that because right. We're here to sell books. And as tempting as what it is sometimes to keep talking about our book, that we tell the whole story and then somebody right. says, well, I don't need to buy it.
Right? No. But no. You got to go buy it now. Yeah,
that's right. They got to go buy it now. And that's what we're going to do is we're going to sell some books, including your newest one called Grab Town. Mm-hmm. This Grab Town is set in New England, but it's set in one of my favorite places to have a story take place, and that's a small town.
Right.
This one is a small town with some secrets.
So oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Grab Town.
Okay. Well, Drawn from Life is more of a domestic suspense, psychological suspense mystery, and Grabtown goes dark. So Grabtown, and you know it's going to be dark because the very first part of the book is a prologue, and in that prologue we have three small immigrant girls locked in a shipping container going, they don't know where. And then we leave those girls because it's just the prologue. And we go into chapter one. And now we've got a situation where, again, I have two family members coming together to clean out their mother's house after she's died. It's the twin sisters, and they're clearing out their mother's house, and they discover this old manuscript. And the manuscript is a unfinished, appears to be an unfinished novel that was written by mom's best girlfriend, AJ, back when mom was pregnant with the twins that we're now meeting. So the twins are 40 years old, and their mom, when their mom was pregnant with them, they discover that their mom might have been involved in a cold case murder, something that's never been solved from 1985. We're in a small town, and it's a mill town. It's kind of a depressed area. It's a mill town in northeastern Connecticut, 10, 12,000 people. I happen to live in such a town. It's called Putnam, Connecticut. You might find it on the map, you might not. It's big enough to have a hospital running down the middle and some old mills and a little radio station. And so it's got a business district, but really it's rural. It's dairy cows and apple orchards and maple syrup, cottage industries, things like that. Very quiet, very backwater rural, and not doing all that well economically. Now it is, but back 40 years ago it wasn't. So we've got a kind of a dark gothic sort of setting, and small town secrets is a theme that's going to run through here, and how people tend to take care of each other without necessarily bringing in the police or wanting things broadcast that they don't want necessarily broadcast, made public. And the way that small towns might work that way to protect each other, but not necessarily let those secrets come out.
There's conflict also between the twins, correct?
Yes. One of them is the good, a lot of people say, oh, well, you're twins, you've got to be close. Well, I've known some twins that were not that particularly close. And so I've created a couple of twins who there's a good girl and there's the bad girl, or there's a good girl and there's the troubled girl who always seems to have the wrong things happen or happen to her. And she's a little resentful of the other twin, who she thinks of as her older sister. And the one who's the troubled one has been pretty much out of the family and away from the family for maybe 20 years and hasn't been helping much to take care of mom as their mother got sick and then passed away. And the troubled twin is also fancies herself as a writer. She's a frustrated writer, and she's kind of part of an art scene out on the West Coast, and there may or may not be drugs involved with that, and there may be too much drinking involved with that. So she's not got that perfect pristine life that she sees her older sister is having, and she kind of envies that and resents her for it. So the two of them don't really see eye to eye on much, and but they have to come together now to work together to solve this mystery, because half of the novel that they found has Cassie's name on it. The twins are named Cassie and Anna. And eventually they find the second half of the novel, but it's got Anna's name on it. And they know their mother left it for them. And as they start reading, they have to share the two parts. And they discover that their mother was not the person they thought she was. Their mother led a very different life before the twins were born. And they're discovering exactly what that was. There's problems with abuse. There's issues of criminal action taking place. I'm not going to give any spoilers away there either. But this one goes dark. And as they read more and learn about the crimes that had been committed 40 years ago, they realize that, yeah, their mother was a very different person. And then a detective who appears in the very first story, the old story, actually comes back into the contemporary one.
In AJ's story.
In AJ's story, he was the active detective on that murder mystery.
Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Mystery case in AJ's story, the 1985 story, the manuscript. And then he shows up. He's retired now. He's in his 70s. And he's still asking questions about that old murder. And so the two twins in our present day story, Cassie and Anna, start to wonder exactly what it was that was going on back then. And then the action shifts to the contemporary story, and one of the twins finds something really horrifying on the computer that her husband apparently left for her. And that's Cassie's husband. Cassie's husband is a wealthy businessman. He's been away in Hong Kong, and he might just come back fairly soon. And she's going to decide what to do with this horrifying stuff she's found on her computer. If she takes it to the police, what she does, who's in danger. So the two threads come together. And the old crimes haven't really ended. They've just changed.
It's I was reading one of the reviews, and they used the word, it's a thriller with a lit fuse and an explosive ending. And again, here we don't talk about endings because we're here to sell books. But in listening to you talk about your book now, it's got so many ingredients in it. To me, it's almost like a really, really good bowl of homemade stew on a cool winter day or cool fall day up in New England. It's got all the right ingredients in it, but sticking with the idea of a fuse, I think it's a very slow burning fuse that goes through this story. And if there was a suspense meter on it, you keep raising it up and lowering it down, raising it up and lowering it down. And I think that's what makes these type of books so exciting to read. It's not an old Dick Tracy type of story where you got a good guy and a bad guy and a cop with a magic watch. It tells a story of people throughout the book. I'm excited about getting it. And I pre-ordered it because I want to read this story. It sounds tremendous.
Yeah, actually, the suspense part has been a lot of the reviewers, and I've gotten some good reviews from Kirkus and Seattle Book Reviews and Book Life also, which is part of Publishers Weekly. They do the really well-known reviews. And Kirkus, for example, calls it a dark, satisfying thriller, perfect for readers who love family drama and scandalous secrets. And then they comment on the pacing. They call it a masterfully constructed work, balancing the story within the story with excellent pacing and a nail-biting showdown. So I really like that one, too. I think they caught that right on the head. I've been very happy with the reception it's received. In fact, Kirkus just named it one of their, I heard today that they're going to choose it as one of their selections for their November 15th catalog and newsletter. And they don't do that very often with
Well,
indie
congratulations.
published books. So I'm really thrilled. That just goes out all over the place to people.
That's wonderful. Congratulations on that. And you have some events coming up too.
Oh yeah, I have a zillion events coming up, and you're going to ask me about them, but I'll just say that I've got a lot of book signings, local events, interviews on the radio stations around here in northeastern Connecticut. I'm doing a couple of other podcasts as well, and I've been invited to be on a horror and mystery radio show at midnight in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I've been told that this 2-hour Sunday night radio show is one of the top ones in the nation. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I can't. I just signed up for it today, and they want me on there on a Sunday evening at midnight.
People love a good mystery. We all want to feel like we're going to solve it before the author, the storyteller, tells us who done it. We figure we can figure it out ourselves. And I think that's one of the things that mystery readers enjoy so much, is trying to figure it out before you reveal the endings for us. So congratulations on that. You have something else you're working on? Is that?
I have a few things. I have a couple of things that I'm working on. And just to digress a little bit and go back on the origin of Grabtown, the way I got the idea for the story within the story is that 35 years ago, I wrote a novel. It was my first novel that I'd written. And I almost got it published. I had it shopped out through an agent to a number of publishers, and there was one that was interested. And then it didn't happen. So I put it on a shelf, put it away. I was busy. I had my day job. I had to work. And I put it away, and I just didn't forget about it, but I didn't know what I was going to do with it. Well, recently, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we were in the process of moving out of North Carolina and packing boxes, as you do, and unpacking and whatever. And I came across this thing, and I read it. I looked at it again, and I thought, oh, that sucks. That's terrible. And then I looked at parts of it, and I said, well, about 30% of it doesn't suck. 30% I'm going to hang on to. And then I looked at it, and I said, but I wrote this in the late 80s, early 90s. We didn't have internet. We didn't have cell phones. The plot would not hold together if we had internet and cell phones back in 1988. So I can't use that. I really can't bring it up to date. But what I can do is I can make it a found manuscript just as I found it here in this box 35 years later. So I took about 30% of the original story, and I worked it in with the two twins, because in the original story, there was a woman who was pregnant with the twins. And so, okay, let's write it from the story of the grown-up twins, and we'll make the rest of it, you know, a story within a story, called a crosscut, I think, and flashback. And apparently it works, because, yeah, people seem to like it.
That is really cool.
So don't throw them away. Don't ever throw your babies away. I had, you know, some editors will say, oh, be ready to murder your babies. You know, you got to cut out the stuff that doesn't work. And I had one really nice editor tell me, don't kill them off. Rehome them. Never delete it. Never get rid of it. Find a new place for it. And I do that in a lot of my writing. If I need to cut something out because I've gotten too wordy, I'll set it aside. And instead of living in that story or living in that novel, maybe I'll turn it into a poem, or it becomes a short story, because I also like to write short form as well.
I agree 100%. I've got so many unfinished stories, and some of them go way, way back. And a lot of them, I think we think of stories and just they're not ready to be turned into a book, but they're really good stories. And like you said, somewhere along the way, maybe they wake up. Yeah, I'm glad you shared that with us. That's a real life, a real part of you and your life that made it into that story. And as writers, we want to, I think, if we're not careful, all of a sudden, all of it's about our life and about our perspective. And we do have to be able to step outside her own perspective sometime to tell a good story. You mentioned that one written, I think you said 35 years ago.
Right.
And you couldn't Google research it. You couldn't do anything.
No.
And
no.
Now, because we can do all that stuff, I think it's easier to not just have just our point of view on something.
Right.
I don't think your background is a detective. I didn't read anywhere in your bio that you used to be a detective.
No, but I was a radio journalist at the small town. Yes, this for a couple of years, for several years, actually, about 7 years in radio news journalism. And so my main character in the old story, the 1985 story, who's telling the story, is a radio station reporter at this little radio station that I used to work for. And I actually put the setting in, it's very thinly disguised, Putnam, Connecticut. I renamed the town to Winslow, Connecticut, but it's basically it's Putnam. And I was the radio station afternoon news journalist there. And so that's what she is. And so I worked that in there. There's also a fire that takes place in that old story. And I was a volunteer firefighter for a couple of years, going way back. And so I can work that in as well. But then for the technical details on police procedures, I went to a friend in the Connecticut State Police, and I asked him to walk me through the local police barracks and take me down into the cells and show me where they would do interviews. And so I like to do my research. I want to make sure I get that part right.
I think it adds to our storytelling. It adds to our books. And
yes.
You've had an incredible life with outside of the writing part of it, which adds to your character. And when your character develops like that, then developing characters like you have in your writing, I don't want to say it's easier, but it's definitely fuller. So
yes.
Where can we get our listeners, where can they get not only the book that's coming out soon, your past books? I know they're on Amazon.
Yes. They're also available through bookshop.org, and I'm a big supporter of indie bookshops and have many friends who work in bookshops. And I'm also a big supporter of libraries. So I'm going to be going at the end of the month to the New England Library Association conference and talking books there with people as well. So as far as where they are, Amazon, you have to mention Amazon because that's the biggest retailer in the world. And everybody knows Amazon. Barnes & Noble, any bookshop, bookshop.org for online. And everywhere else they sell books. So and I have it available in hardcover, softcover, and ebook right now, working on the audiobooks for both novels and the short stories.
Good for you.
Yeah, working on that. And local bookshop, but if you go to Kobo, if you go to Apple Books, if you go to Walmart, they're not there yet necessarily, but they will be after the 15th of October.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations on everything that you've done, Sarah. It's been a pleasure for me to talk to you about your writing, and I'm excited for Grabtown. Again, October 15th for our listeners. You can pre-order it today, and you can get that Grabtown coming soon. But again, her other books are also there. We'll give it a real quick plug. You've got one called Carriage Driving, one called Positive Horse Training, one called Jump with Joy.
Yes.
You.
I wrote horse books. That was my first writing career was writing nonfiction books for horse training, and so those were published through a traditional publisher, and I had an agent the whole thing, and so those came out in 1993, 2003, 2005. So they were and they did okay for that market, and they're still live and out there.
You got any last words for our listeners?
Well, I just hope that people get something out of the books that I write. And I write them primarily because I need to write them. I feel compelled to write when I have a good story idea. I love it when people read. I love it when they give me feedback. I love reading reviews. I love talking with other writers about writing, And I just enjoy all of that. And I will keep on writing. I had 3 short stories published this year, and I'm working on the next novel.
Fantastic. Now, listen, listeners, she said 2 things there that are very important. Feedback, and another word for feedback is reviews. Indie writers, that's what we are. We depend on those reviews. It doesn't take you a minute. And our indie writers depend on you, not only for buying their books, but for reviewing them, sharing them with your friends. So you guys get out there and do that, especially with GrabTown. Do it right now. Don't hesitate. Sarah, it was nice meeting you.
Thank you so much. This has been absolutely charming and wonderful and delightful. And I've had a great, great evening. Thank you.
Well, that was my time with Sarah P. Blanchard, author of GrabTown. A very intriguing story written by a very interesting woman. It comes out October 15th. You can pre-order today on Amazon. Look down in the show notes. You'll see the link there. Well, it's time for me to get out of here. Time to hit the road. Keep an eye out for me. I'm the one walking down, carrying a book under his arm. Have a great day.